This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My first series collection is out. The first three books, The Storm Below, are gathered in one spot. When Ari and Shailene are drafted into the Autonomy's Navy, their love is stressed to the breaking. Assassins, dark gods, the demonic storm riders threaten all they hold dear. Today, I'm joined by Ryan Kirk. He is the fantasy author of The Gate Beyond Oblivion.
How are you doing today, Ryan?
Oh, I am doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine, just fine. So, I always like to start these interviews out with a fun question or two. So, Ryan, are you a dwarf person or a dog person?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to go with dwarf. I will confess that I probably feel about dogs like some people feel about children, where they're fun to visit, but I'm always happy to hand them off to somebody else after about 20 minutes.
Okay. Well, it was a great interview.
But dwarves are cool.
Yeah. Oh, God, did I ask a dwarf person or a dog person? Wow. Yeah. That is not what that question was supposed to be, but that's what I have written down here. All right. Well, that was fun. So you like dwarves better than dog? That's good to know. All right. So let's talk about your book, The Gate Beyond Oblivion. It follows two characters, according to the blurb, Brant and Alina, as they struggle to uncover the secrets about their empire. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your two protagonists?
Yeah, so they were both really interesting to write. Brant is a warrior with what would be considered the equivalent of the special forces in our military. Okay. Small group of magically trained warriors who are like a subset of the regular army. And they stumble upon a working of magic that should not be possible. In this world, there are elemental magics, but the elemental magics are limited by what they call the cost, which is no one can do more than they would be able to do with their own body's energy to begin with. So if you have, say, a stone affinity, you could pick up a stone, but a stone no heavier than what you could pick up with your own muscles.
Okay.
And in the course of their investigation, they discover a piece of magic that defies their understanding, and that launches Brant's half of the story as he begins to explore what they know and what they've been lied about when it comes to their magical training.
Okay.
And Alina is a younger character. She, when the story opens, she's in the equivalent of high school, about to graduate, move on to university. But she is a little bit bored in her small town and moonlights as a thief. And she discovers, in the course of one of her nocturnal adventures, an artifact that is far more powerful than she expected. And as the story goes on, the story twists these two characters together as they're trying to figure out the lies that have been at the heart of their empire for many generations.
Okay. So where was the idea that came from, having magic kind of only being what you could physically do? Where did that idea come from?
I guess I would maybe call it twisting of Newton's laws of gravity. I think that I've always loved the idea that for every action, there has to be an equal and opposite reaction. And so I just kind of mirrored that idea onto this fantasy world where you could potentially do some cool things, but you can't do things more than what you would have been able to do anyways. And so it doesn't necessarily make them useless, but they're more... there are more tricks than they are fundamental to the operation of their world. And I thought that was a pretty fun concept.
Okay. Can, like, anyone learn magic or just certain people? Or
That is one of the beliefs that they question. When the story begins, they believe that there are people who are naturally gifted and those who are not.
Okay.
But that is another part of the secret that they have to decide whether or not that's true.
All right. So, what about our antagonists? Who are the people that are going to be going against our protagonists?
Yeah, so in this book, it's a little bit difficult to talk about who the antagonists are without being spoilery.
Okay, okay.
But I can say that they are marching against the course of history, and so there are well-established forces in this world that do not want them to dig any deeper into these questions.
Okay. So besides Brandt and Alina, are there any other sort of standout characters, like fan favorites or anything?
In this series, I am a particular fan of a young boy that we meet somewhere near the middle of the book named Azalith. And he is a young boy from a foreign country who Elena meets on the streets of the city, and he has been spying for his people. And he serves as an introduction to a whole new country as Lena is tracking down the answers to these mysteries.
Okay. So what was sort of the inspiration behind this series?
You know, that is a really good question. I am definitely the sort of person who likes to start a series by beginning with the characters and then throwing them into a situation. And so for me, I was really interested in the idea of this very elite warrior crossing paths with like a young delinquent thief and where that adventure may take them. Where the idea for the world came, I think I was really interested in exploring a place where all of the rules that they took to be for granted as just a part of their daily lives were actually up in the air. And so that was where the story evolved from, was just questioning everything that they thought they knew and that everything they thought was real.
Okay. That's pretty cool. So how did you tackle the world building?
I am a dedicated pantser. And so I am definitely the sort of person who makes up the world building as I go along. And whenever I come up with a new idea, it goes into a notebook. And that notebook grows from just a couple of pages when I first get started, just a rough sketch of what the world might look like. And it gets filled in with details as I go until it's several dozen pages at the least in its own right.
Awesome. So that's an interesting way to. I kind of do a little bit like that, where I'll do I always like to start with my maps, and then I like to have sort of basics, just sort of country people's, you know, basic cultural stuff set in place, and then I can just sort of casually drop stuff and sort of build it as I go, and really kind of just focus really where my story is actually at, and then just kind of leave the rest of the world as, you know, something intriguing for the readers to maybe think about what's over the horizon or whatever.
Why, One of these days I'm going to have to start with a map, because there's nothing worse than having to go back and make sure that all of your places are in the right place.
I'm telling you, like, I think starting with the map, like, once you have, like, the sort of what you want your world to be, I really think it's got to be your next step. Even if you're never going to put it in the book, just so you have the night, just so you can keep the, you know, the geography straight.
Absolutely. It's one of the, when I'm doing my editing passes, it's one of the most frustrating things for me is going back and making sure that all the, like, distances and travel times make sense, and having to draw the map after the fact often reveals some pretty silly errors.
Yeah, I bet it does. So you say you're a pantser. I mean, do you, like, full-on pants? Do you just, like, have no idea where your story's going, or... And you just hope you find the ending by the time you have enough words?
No, absolutely full-on pantser. I've experimented with different methods. I've done, probably most of the major ones that exist in the writing world today. But I just keep coming back to pantsing. I genuinely start a story having no idea what's going to happen or where it's going to go. And I love the process.
Well, that's I kind of used to be that way. Well, I mean, at least I'd have an ending in mind. But I found I write faster if I have an outline. Because I guess it's like, as I have to spend less time kind of thinking as I'm writing. It's not the right word. I'm thinking as I'm writing, but it's more I'm thinking more about, like, the characters and less about what is the plot doing, and I don't know, so... For me, it helps just if I have this sort of roadmap of this is the plot and these are the things I need to remember to get into the chapter, to make the story work. And I will tend to pants the emotional stuff a lot more, though.
I know that. I mean, my own opinion of it is that, like, it's, I think there's this tendency to say that you're, like, either or, but at the end of the day, you're kind of a spectrum, right? Like,
I'm definitely a spectrum. I mean, like, my initial book outline might not actually come together, but I do chapters. Like, I'll do outline a couple chapters at a time, like 4 or 5, and then write them, and then figure out the next couple chapters. And that lets the story kind of develop, but at the same time, it lets me kind of look at my really bare bones outline for the book and kind of keep myself kind of on track, but still leave room to discover stuff on the way, or I just didn't think of something and it doesn't work and I gotta come up with plan B or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I'm the same way. Like, I by the time I sit down, I usually know what I'm going to write, but I may have come up with it that morning, or more likely the night before. It's like, ooh, that would have been a cool idea, and then run with that.
Sure. So it's a book series, right?
It is, yeah. It is the first part of a trilogy, which I am just nearing the completion of the third book. Third book should release in December.
Awesome. So you didn't get tripped up by anything like you're in the third book, and you're like, how do I end this, or anything like that?
Well, the fun part is I'm not even sure how I am going to end it yet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'm about 120 into the third book, and I figure there's probably about 20 or 30,000 left to go, and still not entirely sure what's going to happen, but it should be fun.
Awesome. I remember I wrote my first fantasy series, and I'm like, it's going to be 5 books. I kind of figured by the end of book 2. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm ending it, or how I'm defeating my evil god or anything. And I'm like, I hope I figured this out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you had this experience as you were going through this process, but what I've found is that, like, the answer is always somewhere in what you've written, whether you realize it or not.
It really was. There was something I put into book 2 that I realized was the solution to how do I kill my evil god, it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, cool. So I've even set it up. So this is completely not any, like, Deus Ex Machina or anything. It's already in the books. I previewed it. You're right. Like, I shut it off. Like, I knew what I was doing. And
yeah, I have found that to be universally true. Like, sometimes it is harder to find it than others. But yeah, you know, I lack a good explanation for it, but it always seems that, you know, in the course of telling your story, you have your answer. It makes sense. You just have to find it.
Yeah, yeah. I think readers might be shocked by how often writers don't know what they're doing.
I do chuckle when I get the reader emails and they're like, oh, the book was so intricately plotted. I'm very impressed. And I was like, well, thank you.
I mean, I definitely know there's intricately plotted. I know, like, I remember Ted Williams, when he was talking about his fantasy series, Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn, he said he delivered, like, a detailed 3-book outline before to his publisher before he wrote any of it.
Yeah, and...
And by the end of it, he was kind of really tempted to go off because he went through a really bad divorce in the middle of writing it. He wasn't interested in more of a happy ending any longer, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any right or wrong. I think it's whatever works best for the writer, and it's fun to see the way that different writers make it work for them.
It definitely is. I mean, I was shocked when I learned that George R. R. Martin is basically a pantser.
Mm-hmm.
Although it explains why he has such trouble getting a next book out, because I'm fairly certain he's run himself into some corner again.
I actually remember when season 8 came out and there was all the hullabaloo around it. I thought one of the most insightful articles that I had seen relating to the merits of season 8, however you see those, was that, you know, when the books were based very tightly on Martin's work, because he was such a pantser, he spent so much time focusing on his characters and the decisions they made and their growth and their challenges through the course of the books. But when they got to that season 8, you know, and it switched over to being much more focused in the hands of the TV producers, that they switched to more of that, like, plotting, like, this has to happen and this has to happen and this has to happen.
Yeah. I mean, no offense, I don't know, I noticed, like, as early as season 2 that those guys were not really good at writing Martin's stuff when they weren't following his roadmap. Like, what they wrote was not what Martin would write, and it's why I quit watching the show actually at season 2. They made some choices that I really, really hated, and I could kind of really feel like see where their talent lay versus Martin. It was just like, you guys, I don't know. I thought someone with more skill, I don't know, should have been handling it. They're good at adaptation. I can't deny that. They're very good at adapting his work. They did that. Mm-hmm. But whenever they were doing their own thing, they were not the right people to do it.
So you saw it coming from a long ways away.
I really did. I stopped. I really loved season 1 with one or two minor parts, but they pretty much stayed on book with season 1. But, like, there was a few things, like Shay. They changed Shay's character really badly, and I didn't like it. Like, they had that redheaded, you know, prostitute, and she really had Shay's personality and Shay's, like, description. So, and then they had this, that was really weird. It's like you had Shay in the show, but you called her a different name and then created this other character and called her Shay. I don't know. But, no, season 2, there was a couple of things that, yeah. I did not like season 2, obviously. Except for the episode Martin wrote I thought was good. But that was it.
Yeah, he is a surprising... I'm actually... I'm reading a collection of Martin's short stories right now, Dream Songs. And, you know, everyone today just associates him with Game of Thrones. But, man, his career was varied and...
Yeah, I mean,
even in his earliest works, which maybe weren't technically very good, you could see the enthusiasm and love he was bringing to. I mean, he wasn't just fantasy either; it was fantasy and sci-fi and horror, and you could see his love and his skill already developing, even back in like the 1970s.
Okay, yeah, I've only read his books. I'm fairly certain I've watched some of his TV shows. Because he was a writer on Murder, She Wrote, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know my mom made me watch a lot of that. So, I was a kid in the 80s, so, and she really liked that show.
It was a good show.
I'm sure it was, but I was like 6 or 7, so I had no appreciation.
Yeah. you wanted Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, I don't even think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were a thing yet, because they came out at the very end of that decade, like 89.
True.
But I was really into them, so can't deny that.
Yeah, I still am.
Oh, yeah. I've watched that first live-action movie they did, and it still holds up. It was really good.
Surprisingly well, right?
Yeah. It was very adult in how it handled things. It wasn't like talking down to kids. Unlike the sequels.
No, not at all. Yeah, I completely agree. I still think that first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie is fantastic.
So what is next for you in your writing career? Guess getting out the rest of this book series, but anything else planned besides the Gates of Oblivion?
Yeah, the Oblivion's Gate series will end here this December, and then I'll be moving on to a new trilogy that this isn't quite accurate. It's probably a little bit of a misrepresentation, but inspired in part a little bit by Jim Butcher's Codex Alera series and Pokemon.
Okay. That sounds like a nice combination.
I'm really interested in, again, as I kind of talked about, like with the idea of characters, I'm really interested in the idea of mixing a skilled but like non-magical main character with like a very magically powerful but maybe not like world-wise entity as like a partner. Going to do almost like a little thriller-esque or mystery-esque plot setup with that.
Brendan Sanderson has like a YA novel called Arithmetis, where like the main character is like the one person that can't do magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was good, and I wonder if he'll ever write like the rest of it. Then again, he needs to write more Stormlight Archives. So,
you know, the pace that guy goes, though, he'll eventually get around to it.
Right. He's a machine. Well, yeah. It was really great talking with you, Ryan.
You as well, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you have yourself a good one.
Yeah, you too. Take it easy, sir.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.